17-2111. You may proceed.
Good morning, Your Honors. Excuse me, Mr. Vasilievich. May it please the Court. The search that led to Mr. Metz, the discovery of the firearm in Mr. Metz's vehicle, was unconstitutional. The District Court didn't make a finding about that, but I think the record demonstrates that it's clear. What the District Court did do was set aside whether that search was unconstitutional and found that the firearm would have been discovered by the inevitable discovery doctrine. And the District Court clearly erred when it made these findings. What the Court had to do under this Court's most recent pronouncement in United States versus Christie is find that the firearm would have been seized without a Fourth Amendment violation. And when reviewing the Court's factual determinations, this Court looks at that for clear error. And the Court made two separate factual determinations. The first is that the firearm would have been discovered pursuant to the local police department, the Albuquerque Police Department's standard operating procedure, SOP, for vehicles that are involved in an armed robbery. And the second is that it would have been inevitably discovered under the plain view doctrine, assuming that the police didn't execute that the APD SOP on armed robberies. And there were two separate findings by the District Court about how the firearm would have been discovered in plain view if they had not done this illegal search and if they had not done an impoundment of the vehicle as evidence in an armed robbery. The government, of course, at the evidentiary hearing had the burden to prove by preponderance of evidence that the search was justified by the inevitable discovery doctrine. And the parties addressed it somewhat in the briefs below, but the government at below essentially argued plain view, and not inevitable discovery by plain view, but that the firearm was found in plain view.
When you say illegal search, and we're talking about the so-called inventory search, the first one, do you say it's illegal because that's not called for in the standard operating procedures? Or even if it were in the standard operating procedures, you'd still contend it was illegal?
I'd say yes to both. You know, if there was a standard operating procedure that says, hey, the ROPE unit, the repeat offender program, which was referred to as ROPE, when they're involved and they're typically focused on repeat offenders or violent offenders or things like that, when they're involved and they arrest somebody in a vehicle, they can search the vehicle for guns, knives, weapons, rolling meth labs, things that they encounter on a regular basis. If there was an SOP of that nature, I think the SOP would be invalid. The only SOP that I think is valid that says you can search a vehicle without probable cause is an inventory SOP pursuant to impoundment. And that's a situation where there isn't probable cause to search the vehicle, but the police are impounding the vehicle under one of the recognized reasons to impound a vehicle. It presents a safety hazard to the roadway. There isn't an alternative to leaving the vehicle there, or having the defendant have it towed or have somebody come along. So that's the only SOP that I think is constitutional. The SOP that's in play isn't unconstitutional. It's simply a directive to police. If you have a vehicle that's involved in an armed robbery, we'd prefer you seal it, take it to the crime lab, and get a search warrant. Of course, there'd have to be probable cause. And then we'll search that vehicle because there might be evidence of an armed robbery. And so I think that, getting back to your question, it was illegal because the ROPE team had sort of just created their own policy, their own procedure that they used in every case involving vehicles. We only know that from Detective Perea, who wasn't a member of the ROPE team. He was a robbery or burglary detective, and he had developed evidence following this incident, which I don't think is a robbery. And even when you read Detective Perea's affidavit, it's sort of weak on the robbery element. he had developed information that Mr. Metz was responsible. He asked the rope team to find him because that's what they were good at. That's what they did. And he needed their help. And Detective Perret was the only one who testified at the hearing. Nobody from the rope team testified. The government put on no evidence about what they might have inevitably done if they didn't have this illegal search policy. So what Detective Perret has said is, well, I know that this is what they do. They have this policy. When I wrote in my affidavit that they found the firearm pursuant to an inventory, I didn't mean the inventory that is allowed by, you know, this court's precedent and the United States Supreme Court precedent for impounding a vehicle. I meant the inventory that the rope team does sort of informally.
What is securing a car to make sure that there's nothing in it that will harm people?
That's right.
So if they had left it parked, they would have had to roll up the windows, right?
Well, I
don't hear the car.
I don't know.
They had to open the door to do that.
I don't know if that's true.
They have to leave it parked there or they have to tow it, right? It's in an abandoned mall parking lot.
I think those are two options. I think there's another, which is they can offer, you know, under Sanders, this court's most recent discussion of it, they can ask Mr. Metz, would you like to get your own tow? Would you like to have somebody come and secure the vehicle and take it out of
here? That's not what happened in Sanders. What happened in Sanders was the companion said, I can get somebody to come and get the car, and they ignored him.
I agree. But I think what the court said is that if you're going to do a standard impoundment, not an evidentiary impoundment, you have to consider other alternatives. And one of the other alternatives is an individual can secure their own tow or have someone else come and get it. So I think the next step would have been Mr. Metz.
But wouldn't they and Everly have discovered it if that was going to happen?
Well, so to answer that question, I don't know. I don't think the record was developed well enough. I mean, there are a number of ways, I suppose, that they could have rolled up the window. I mean, a couple of things. It was sort of assumed, and Mr. Metz doesn't really challenge, that the window was down. Because he had to crawl out of the window. They had him boxed in. He
had to
crawl
out
of the window. I'm sorry?
It kind of had to be open if he crawled out of it.
Exactly. But what happened between that point, Mr. Metz being arrested, and the search being conducted is unclear because Detective Perret didn't
know. So what could happen? Either they leave the car in the parking lot, and unless they're going to stand around and wait till somebody shows up, they're going to have to secure it by rolling up the windows and locking the doors, aren't they?
I don't know that they have to. I think they can ask Mr. Metz. And I think that's what Sanders tells us to do. Ask the driver. And if Mr. Metz says, leave it as it is, I don't care. It's
no,
fine.
No, Sanders, they asked the companion. The companion said, I can get somebody else, and they ignored him.
Well, and I think that's a problem, too. But I think what Sanders teaches is consider the other alternatives. And one such alternative is asking the driver.
So in here, if they ask the driver to call somebody else, either they have to stand there and wait till that somebody else shows up, or they have to roll up the windows and secure the car and thereby find the gun inevitably.
That's right. So for it to be inevitable, we have to assume that there wasn't going to be somebody close by that could just swing by and pick up the car, that they would have rolled it up, that they wouldn't have wanted to wait a few minutes. And I think it's important to look at the facts of this case. They seized the gun, and then they called Detective Perea, said, hey, we got Mr. Metz here. We've got a gun in the car. And Detective Perea, who's down at his office, heads up that way.
I mean, they seized the gun. It was still in there when Perea arrived, wasn't it?
You're right. I misspoke. They saw the gun. They did not seize it. I agree with the court.
Maybe looking through the window?
I'm sorry?
Maybe looking through the window.
Perhaps.
Or, as I recall, Detective Perea told them over the phone to secure the car, right?
He did.
And to do that, they have to determine if there's anything in there that's harmful.
I think that...
To do that, they have to open the door.
I think if they were looking for something harmful, they would have to open the door, yes. I think the question is whether they had cause to do that.
Aren't they supposed to look in the trunk when they're making sure the car is secure and not harmful? If they're going to leave it there, they've got to look in it and look in the trunk?
I don't think so. I think they only do that if they're going to impound the vehicle or if they have probable cause to believe there's something harmful in the vehicle.
Why would they not have probable cause to think there was something harmful? He had displayed a gun.
Well, I think the problem with that is it was 20 days earlier.
Well, so he carries a gun.
Well, they didn't.
And in fact, the evidence could be read. It's kind of ambiguous whether the prior incident, whether he was carrying a gun when he took the stuff and then just showed the gun when he was driving off, or he had the gun in the car, and that's when he displayed it. So it's not a silly idea that this fellow could have a gun in his car.
No, I don't think it's silly, but I think that...
Reasonable even, isn't it?
I think...
Wouldn't that be a reasonable precaution that for someone like that, you'd worry that there's a gun in the car?
Perhaps it rises to the level of reasonable suspicion, but probable cause is a separate issue, and we're not talking about Mr. Metz still being in the vehicle. He was in handcuffs, sitting on the side of the road.
Yeah, that's not the problem, is whether there's something dangerous in the vehicle.
That's right, and so I think then we have to look at it. At what point do we draw the line? If this had occurred 2 months later, is it okay? If it 6 months later, is it then okay? There's no question
what
that
was remind me of the time frame.
So the robbery or theft, I would like to call it, September 12, 2014, of the dollar store. The arrest of Mr. Metz was October 2, 2014, so about 20 days later. And I think that absent some clear information in the record that Mr. Metz always kept his gun in the car or always had the firearm on him, that sort of thing, I think we have trouble with probable cause. And there's no question if these officers have probable cause to believe the gun's in the car.
But to secure a car, you need probable cause to check to make sure there's not something dangerous in the car?
Well, I think to search it.
Well, I mean, you have searches and you have sweeps. You have protective sweeps, for example, when you arrest somebody at the home, it's kind of like a protective sweep for dangerous items.
I think the protective sweep...
I'm not sure about this, but you think that the precedent requires probable cause?
I think it does. I think the protective sweep doctrine is limited to people yeah, that are danger.
But in this circumstance about securing a car...
I think it does.
All you're allowed to do is go in, but you would have seen the gun if you secured the car. You agree with that, don't you?
I guess it depends. I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
I guess it depends on what we mean by securing the car. I don't know that there's...
To roll up the window, you had to open the door, and you would have seen the gun between the door and the front seat. I thought that was acknowledged, no?
I think that that's true. If you open the door, you see the gun.
Well, wait a minute. This is an important point, and you're taking a different position than I thought you did below, which is that we don't know where the firearm was. There was no testimony about that. We have a picture that shows the firearm wedged between the seat and the door, but that was down at the laboratory or somewhere else. We don't know. In other words, nobody who first found the firearm said that's where that firearm was. It could have been moved. But if you're conceding that point now, then we have a different case than I thought we did.
No, and I'm glad you brought that up, Judge Phillips, because that's where it was when Detective Perea saw it. He admitted on the stand that he did not know who found it or where they found it, if it had been moved in any way, shape, or form. So that part is true.
Did you argue that on appeal?
I'm sorry?
Did you argue that point on appeal?
I think we argued that the factual record was insufficient to determine who had found it and where they found it.
Let me ask you another issue. You surprised me a little bit earlier because I didn't think this was an issue. You're saying that the standard operating procedure for towing vehicles involved in armed robberies was unconstitutional. I thought you said that earlier, but maybe I missed it. But in your brief, the argument on that was this is your heading. The record does not support the finding that Mr. Metz's car was towed or would have been towed pursuant to APD's standard operating procedure for vehicles involved in armed robberies, absent the discovery of the firearm. And Are you challenging the constitutionality of that standard operating procedure? I thought you were saying it didn't apply here. But if you're challenging the constitutionality, I'd like to know how you preserve that on appeal.
No, I'm not challenging the constitutionality of that SOP because it requires probable cause. I think I'm just challenging the constitutionality of the ropes.
Unwritten. It requires probable cause of what?
That the vehicle contains evidence of an armed robbery.
No, that the vehicle is evidence of an armed robbery, and it was the vehicle used in the armed robbery or the theft where he thereafter pointed his gun at the security officer.
I think that's
car.
True.
Didn't he point the gun from the car?
He pointed the gun from the car.
So why wouldn't that be adequate? Don't worry about your time. I'd like to get this straightened
sure.
out. So why wouldn't that be adequate ground? Why wasn't it inevitably going to be discovered because they would inventory and pound an inventory a vehicle associated with an armed robbery?
Well,
investigation of an armed robbery.
2 points. Number one is that they didn't have probable cause 20 days later. And number two, it wasn't an armed robbery. It was alleged to be a robbery in the affidavit, but I think a magistrate reviewing a search warrant for the vehicle, trying to determine is there a probable cause that this vehicle was involved in an armed robbery, would have to conclude that it was not.
The SOP talks about investigating the possibility of an armed robbery. Surely they would be that this vehicle is relevant to an investigation of an armed robbery. Maybe they haven't proved it yet. What's missing there?
Well, the SOP doesn't save them. It's not, if it's an impoundment SOV not related to evidential purposes, they can do it if they follow a procedure. If it's an SOP of investigating a crime.
Well, the SOP that was involved here, when it becomes necessary to tow vehicles. Okay. Violent crimes investigation. 248.5. Vehicles towed for evidentiary purposes shall be processed at the scene whenever practical. Violent crimes investigations and or incidents where vehicles will be sealed and towed include but are not limited to armed robbery. Why would that not apply here?
I think it does apply in the sense that it's a directive to police to consider whether you should do it for evidential purposes. But if we're talking about an evidential SOP, you still have to apply the Fourth Amendment, probable cause, and all of those things that come into play when you're going to seize a car as evidence.
You're not challenging the constitutionality of that. You're reading it to require probable cause, where it doesn't say probable cause.
Well, I think you have to. I think the only SOP that can be that allow you to search a vehicle without probable cause is an impoundment for safekeeping purposes to get it off the road or because you've arrested the driver. You have to separate that from SOPs that deal with evidence and evidence of a crime because those still require probable cause.
Maybe I'm not reading all this. Okay, thank you. Do you have any questions?
Yeah.
Questions?
May it please the court, my name is Paul Mishlevitz and I represent the United States in this matter. To accept Mr. Metz's argument, this court would have to find that Detective Perea, upon learning of the arrest of Mr. Metz from the same Cadillac Eldorado that he is believed to have used in the armed robbery of the dollar store less than a month earlier, and knowing that Metz is suspected of carrying a firearm and believed to carry a firearm, would have just, if the firearm had not been found by an unknown member of the rope team, left the vehicle there in the abandoned parking lot with its window rolled down, not sought a warrant to search it, not sought a warrant to seize it, not seized it pursuant to any impoundment policy, including the active at the time APD mandatory impoundment policy, and would have just left it there. so that someone else could find a gun in it, if there were a gun in it, so that someone else could steal Mr. Metz's car, if they could figure out how to work the ignition.
Let's take those alternatives one by one.
Yes, sir.
So one was leave the window open. Would they have just left it there with the window open? Okay, let's say no. He would have secured the vehicle, rolled up the window.
Yes, sir.
Would he have seen the gun there?
Yes, sir. The district court found that it was indeed inevitable that anyone rolling up that window would have seen the gun there.
The judge found that the judge found that the gun was between the car seat, the front driver's seat, and the door?
Yes, sir. And that is what the picture showed as well, that was put into evidence not only at the trial but at the hearing itself.
And there's sufficient evidence to say that finding is not clearly erroneous, is your point, even though no one knew that picture really reflected the situation at the time of the arrest?
Yes, sir, because the district court and we here are not required to assume that someone moved that pistol from some unknown previous location to the location it was in when the photo was taken.
Well, wait a minute. We need to get something straight, which is, it's your burden at the suppression hearing. Is that right?
Yes, sir.
And you had one witness testify.
Yes, sir.
You could have had more. You could have had the officers who were there and saw the gun when they opened the door or found the gun under the seat and moved it so the detective could see it. You could have had any number of people testify to nail down that fact. And instead you had one witness testify who could only say, when I got there, I saw the firearm when the door was open and here's where it was, and then offered a photograph that who knows when it was taken and when anyone had touched that firearm. And so it's not really where you're asking the court there. We would be asking the court to assume this and that and the other. All I want is some proof that's properly presented to the court. And right now, in my mind at least, there's a big question mark on whether that firearm, as photographed, was in the same location as when found. And let me tell you why. And have you respond to that. We don't have anything in the search warrant affidavit or anywhere that says, we opened the door and we saw the firearm. Instead, what we have is something that contradicts that, namely that the firearm was found as part of this quasi-inventory search. In other words, after the doors open and the windows rolled up, that's when firearm, when we start sorting around and rooting around. And so, to me, it's a question of proof. Did you prove it?
We did, and I do not take from anything in the record, Your Honor, and Your Honor can read the record for himself, but I don't take from anything in the record that the window was already rolled up by the time the search was begun that then originally found
Neither
the
do
firearm.
I. You're missing the point. They open the door, they roll up the window, and nobody at that point has said, and we saw a firearm. Instead, they say they found it during the so-called inventory search.
I do not take from the record, Your Honor, that the first inventory search, which I might describe as a protective sweep, but was described in the testimony at the hearing as the rope team inventory search, was subsequent to the rolling up of the window. The impression I got from the record was that upon opening the door to perform that original search to make sure nothing in the car was dangerous, the gun was seen.
Tell me the page, because that's what the brief does, is it just kind of glosses over that. And then you don't see a page cite. So I read the entire record, and I don't see that. So if you can give me a page, I'd appreciate it.
There is no page on which Detective Perea describes the search that happened before he got there.
He wouldn't know.
Yes, sir. I agree. What he describes is getting the call from the rope team saying, we saw a gun, and he instructs them, cease work, I'm going to show up, I'm going to decide what to do. He shows up, he decides that the correct thing to do is get a warrant. What we don't have as a finding from the district court, and I think the record would support a finding from the district court, but the district court didn't make it in its memorandum opinion and order, is that the rope team originally found the pistol in accordance with the Constitution as part of their, I would describe it as a protective sweep, but as a part of their initial look into the vehicle to make sure there are no people or dangerous objects in the vehicle. Instead, what the district court did is find, without ruling on that one way or another, inevitably, here are two ways that that firearm would have been found. I think there are probably additional inevitable ways, but there is no plausible reason to believe that even if the pistol hadn't been found by the rope team the way it was originally found, that Detective Perea would leave that vehicle there with the window rolled down, unsecured, not tow it for a search warrant, not tow it to the tow yard.
Didn't the detective testify that he only gave the order to seal it and to tow it after the firearm was found? That was the determinative event. In other words, he could have rolled up the window. They could have locked the door.
My understanding of the record, Your Honor, is that the first phone call he got on the subject was, on the topic was, we have arrested this fellow and we saw a firearm in the car. Not that...
And he said, don't touch anything?
And he said, essentially, these are my words, and the exact words are in the transcript of the hearing, but he told them to stop and he would show up to the scene to make a decision.
Didn't he say secure the car?
I believe yes.
Over the phone.
Which I didn't take from my reading of the record to mean touch or do anything further inside the car. I took it to mean, and I think the district court took it to mean, that they were to stop and that Detective Perea would be the decider about what to do with the car. And indeed, on cross-examination by Mr. Villa, Detective Perea was asked what would the rope team decide to do with the car based on the procedures that were in place at the time. And Detective Perea's response in the hearing was, they wouldn't decide. I'm the case agent. I'm the one who was going to show up and see what the scene looked like and make the decision about what was going to happen to the car.
Can I ask you a question? Just, I want to get a feel for the breadth of what the ruling that you're seeking is.
Yes, sir.
If the facts, and I'm not saying this is so, we're asking you to agree to it. If the facts were that the firearm was under the seat and that it wasn't in plain view and they found the firearm, they set it so that the detective could see it without getting down and getting his pants dirty and everything else, would you contend that that was constitutional?
I would have a tougher row to hoe if that were the original posture of the pistol physically in the car. I take the position that the pistol was, when it was originally seen, in the position in which it was originally seen, and that there is no evidence to the contrary, and that the record as it stands now, even though we do not have the witness that Your Honor correctly noted we do not have, the record that it stands now supports the district court finding that that pistol originally was where the picture shows it to be.
The defendant doesn't argue to the contrary, does he?
Not that I see, Your Honor.
Well,
but
the defendant has contested the plain view. Has the defendant not?
So, as I recall Mr. Villa's argument at the district court level, the long pole in the tent in the plain view analysis is the prong that the viewer of the thing has to have a legal right to be where they are when they view the thing. And anything is in plain view once you get to the place where you can see it with your eyes, but whether you got there legally or not is the question. And as Judge Seymour noted, the pistol, as it's shown where it is in the picture, could have been seen from outside the car. The district court commented at the hearing that it looked to him like it would be more difficult to see from outside the car, but clearly visible once anybody opened the door to the car, which is also true. So if the pistol were originally under the seat, the United States would still have the inevitable discovery by the search warrant technique or the inventory pursuant to the armed robbery investigation by the mandatory towing policy.
Well, wait there, because true enough, the SOP talks about armed robbery. And that seemed curious to me because when the defendant went into the dollar store and stole the 8 packs of cigarettes, he was not wearing a shirt. And everybody, including the district judge, said he probably didn't have a firearm when that happened. And when I look at the affidavit for the search warrant, it doesn't list armed robbery. It lists robbery. And so it really doesn't fit within the SOP that you're trying to rely on.
So the reason I disagree with Your Honor, respectfully, is that in New Mexico there is one statute called robbery. that describes both robbery and armed robbery, and it was never our theory, and as far as I know, never Detective Perea's theory, that the defendant had a gun, that Mr. Metz had a gun when he went into the store. The theory was that he waved the gun at the security guard and the cashier while he was leaving and threatened them not to call the police, and that the waving and displaying of the firearm corresponded to that threat not to call the police. And in New Mexico, the robbery is a crime of violence against the person, and it is violence or threat sufficient to overcome resistance. And the United States' theory is that that includes escape. So if I take a pen off your desk and you look like you want to stop me and get your pen back, and I pull out a pistol and say, you better not try to get this pen back, and you stop your efforts to recover it or complain about it, I feel like I've committed an armed robbery there, even though the original taking of the pencil was a mere larceny.
There are cases in other jurisdictions that are explicit about that. Is there anything in New Mexico, or is there anything defining armed robbery for purposes of this SOP?
There is nothing defining armed robbery for the purposes of SOP, so what we instead have to rely on is the description in the record of Detective Perea's investigation and how he was investigating it, and whether he considered it an armed robbery or not. And I contend that he did.
Does he say that?
So there's one point on pages 6 to 7 of Volume 3, the transcript, where he's talking about a robbery, because, of course, the title of the statute in New Mexico is robbery. And AUSA Hurtado says to him something to the effect of, and is that what you were doing in investigating this armed robbery? And he answers, yes, I was doing the following thing.
But he describes it as, they ask him, what was the arrest warrant for? His answer, it was for robbery of the Dollar General and aggravated assault with a deadly weapon.
Yes. Yes, ma'am.
As I understand it, he was leaving. The security officer was there. He got in the car and he immediately pulled the gun and said, don't call the police.
Yes, ma'am. And the United States contends that that is what we describe in layperson's terms as armed robbery, or common law terms as armed robbery. In New Mexico, the statute is entitled robbery, that describes both what we would describe as simple robbery and then also what we would describe as armed robbery, or in New Mexico, robbery in the second degree. And we know that the DW stood for deadly weapon because the district court specifically clarified that with Detective Perea. And so it's the United States' theory that Detective Perea was investigating a robbery that became an armed robbery when lethal force was threatened to dissuade chase or reporting.
Now, you didn't really respond to part of my question.
Okay, sorry, sir.
There are cases in other jurisdictions that say, in the factual scenario you described here, that's considered an armed robbery. Is there anything in New Mexico saying whether the use of a weapon to effect your escape, to effect your ability to take it away, makes it an armed robbery? Or in New Mexico, do you have to possess it at the time, possess the weapon at least, at the time you actually take the object initially?
I do not currently have a case that answers that question either way. But if it is the preference of the court, I could do further research and inform the court if I'm able to find any after this argument.
I suspect you won't find any, but...
Well, and that's why what I rely on now, and my time's almost up. May I finish my answer? That's what I rely on now is that what matters is what Detective Perea thought he was investigating. And not only does the United States take the position that Detective Perea would have sought a warrant because the car itself was evidence of the robbery, because it is the exact same car that he was alleged to have used during the robbery less than a month earlier, but also that he had enough to get probable cause for the to search the vehicle for other evidence of robbery, even if the pistol had not been found. And
but
you can look.
Detective Perea doesn't say either of those things in his testimony.
Yes, sir. I agree. And instead, what I point to is that the record has enough, and this court can look at the search warrant affidavit itself, excising the one line that mentions the finding of the gun, and assess for itself whether probable cause still lies.
We do that I'm not following, and I may just be missing the point, which is inevitable discovery means it's going to inevitably be discovered. It doesn't mean that hypothetically, if this decision maker were to make a different decision than indicated, then we would have inevitably discovered. So isn't there a missing link there? Don't you have to show that the detective believed there was probable cause? The detective would have towed the automobile for armed robbery, even if no gun had been found?
I would prefer to have that in the record, Your Honor, yes, but I don't think it's required. I think the record supports the district court's findings here that if the pistol had not been found, there were more than one way that the pistol would inevitably have been found later, which is a different way of saying that the district court, looking at this record, looking at the facts before it, can't think of a way that the pistol would have been left there in the car and not found, which is what why I started off my argument today by saying in order to reverse the district court here, this court would essentially have to find that the pistol would not have been found if it were not originally found by the rope team, that the car would have had to have been left there in the abandoned parking lot with the windows down, no search warrant served, not towed to a secure yard for search warrant purposes, not towed to a secure yard for inventory purposes, not inventoried on the scene. And when you look at all the times that Detective Perea discussed the property-securing purpose of his procedures and of the inventory procedures, I'm talking about page 14, page 20 to 21, page 29, again on page 62, all places where Detective Perea talked about securing property as the reason he acts the way he does with someone's property when that person is arrested. This district court was eminently reasonable in finding that there was no way that APD was going to leave that vehicle there that was suspected of having been used in an armed robbery by a person known to carry a pistol less than a month earlier. It just wasn't going to get left there. The pistol was inevitably going to be found. The district court was reasonable in looking at the facts he had to make that assessment.
You need to be briefer when we're over time.
Yes, sir.
I apologize. Respond. So I'm going to ask you a question. I want you to be as brief as possible.
Yes, sir.
And you'll get some more time. Don't worry. This vehicle's towed for evidentiary purposes provision in the SOP. What are the underlying requirements before you get to that? Is this after an arrest? I'm sorry, I just don't have the other pages with me here. But does it mean, does this policy take effect anytime they arrest somebody who's been in a vehicle? Is that the underlying requirement for all these provisions?
Well, there's a warrant out for his arrest, isn't there, from the prior crime?
I'm just wondering if for the SOP.
Yeah.
My answer, sir, is no. My answer is that the SOP does not require an arrest. If we look at page...
What does it require? Okay.
If we look at page 93 of volume 1, yeah. There is a policy statement before the individual rules, and the policy statement lists that it's to authorize the towing of vehicles when necessary as a matter of public safety, to protect property, to preserve evidence, and to remove abandoned vehicles from the city streets and property. So it doesn't... This policy could be followed regarding a car that is found with no arrest happening and nobody anywhere nearby.
Okay.
Is my answer, sir.
And which of those four alternatives applied here?
Public safety applies because of the rope team's description and the facts Detective Perea had about this particular car and the driver of the car, that he was known to carry a pistol, et cetera. So there's a public safety desire to have guns not available in unlocked cars. There is to preserve evidence because the car itself is evidence of armed robbery and may have other evidence within it that's evidence of armed robbery, or simple robbery, or assault with a deadly weapon as explicitly listed.
Okay.
And
thank you.
I wouldn't
thank
say
you.
Abandoned vehicles from city streets and property.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
I don't know how much time he had left already. No, I mean appellate.
Appellate was over by 3 minutes.
So we'll give you 2 minutes anyway.
Thank you, Judge.
We're so fair.
Well, I try to be.
May it please the court. I think the reason that the
evidential SOP does not apply in this case is a couple, the temporal remoteness, as well as the lack of evidence or testimony in the record about whether that was the rope team or Detective Perea's plan in this particular instance. Did he think that this SOP applied? There are lots of SOPs directing police what to do in terms of an evidential situation, but there still has to be probable cause to determine that the vehicle itself is evidence or the vehicle contains evidence of a crime. Otherwise, you have to go to Sanders, you know, or South Dakota versus Opperman, and find a public safety or danger to the, you know, the roadway type exception. You know, to say, as Mr. Mislivich said, that, well, we're concerned that there's firearms in this car because of Mr. Metz's behavior 20 days earlier, pointing a firearm from the car, that's just another way to say it's a probable cause argument. There's probable cause to believe there's a firearm in the car at that time. And we simply don't know what the rope detectives thought or believed. All we know is that Detective Perea made the decision to secure the vehicle, seize the vehicle, impound the vehicle when he learned that there was a firearm in the car. I think the problem with the plain view is there's too many alternatives. In addition to the lack of evidence from the rope team about where they found the firearm, whether they moved the firearm before Detective Perea arrived, but there's too many alternatives. Even if we assume that it was where Detective Perea saw it, where the rope team found it, I think we can sit and think of a lot of hypotheticals about how they never would have seen the gun, and for it to be inevitable, I think there has to be conclusory that they would have found it.
Thank you, counsel. Case is submitted. Counselor excused. I'm going to change the schedule a little bit. Let's